Well, yes, indeed. Good afternoon to you. Todd Feinberg with you, WTIC. As we do every afternoon, we get together to talk about important things and not so important things, but we're going to do some important things, especially this hour. In about a half hour, my nephew will be here. He is the COO of an organization called Helena.org. It's sort of a high-level public policy think tank. And they've been all over the news for some conversations they've been doing with voters. They brought together 500 voters to figure out a way to circumvent the logjam we have in our national political debate. So we'll be talking about that in a half hour. But right now we're going to do another in our continuing series on prison reform. Joining us now is Molly Gill, Vice President of Policy at an organization called FAMM, F-A-M-M, FAMM.org. Molly, welcome to WTIC. It's really nice to have you here. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show. Glad to be here.
So I've been doing this for a couple months, say. I started doing interviews, and we've had maybe, I don't know, 15 or 20 people come on and talk about prison and prison reform, incarceration. I also have a regular guest who comes on every week for the past few months who's been in prison in Connecticut for 22 years, and I'm learning about prison through him. And what I have learned so far is that the incarceration gets the prisoners out of people's way, you know, off the streets, but doesn't seem to be targeted in any meaningful way towards cutting down recidivism and making it so that, say, an illiterate prisoner who's in prison for 15 or 20 years leaves literate. And I wonder if you could address that as sort of a starting point for us.
Sure. Unfortunately, what you're describing is really common in America. In the last 30 years, we've gotten great at warehousing people who've committed crimes, but we have done a terrible job of rehabilitating those people. And the truth is 95% of people in prisons are going to come home someday and be our neighbors again. And so the question that all of us need to ask is, do I want that person to come home better, or do I want them to come home the same or worse? And right now, the truth of the matter is, in most prisons, people are going to be leaving the same or worse.
Are you suggesting that we used to be better at this and we've gotten dumber through the decades?
Well, I do think we've had a major shift in our thinking about prisons in the 1970s and 1980s that has sort of landed us in this dilemma. In the 1960s, 1970s, the prevailing viewpoint about punishment was that we were supposed to hold people accountable, but we believed in the idea of rehabilitation, that we were supposed to be rehabilitating these folks and bringing them back. And then, you know, in the 1980s, crime went up and we all got very scared. America had a high crime era that lasted into the 1990s. And we sort of gave up on rehabilitation, and we said, you know, the best we can do is just punish people, preferably as long as possible. And so we passed a lot of mandatory sentencing laws, three strikes and you're out laws. We did away with parole in a lot of states, so people had to serve 85% of their sentences before they could come home. And essentially what that did over time is it grew our prison population, and we just kept building more and more prisons, and ended up with the world's biggest prison population and highest incarceration rate, which is where we're at now and what we're trying to step back from right now.
But why did putting more people in prison and keeping them there longer go hand in hand with not rehabilitating them? It would seem to me that if you're going to put more people in prison, you're going to keep them there longer, you damn well better have them prepared to get out after you've had them for more time. Like, that's the fundamental responsibility. If you're going to put people back out on the streets, not be putting dangerous criminals back on the streets, but people who are prepared to operate in the modern world.
Well, I think along with this rush to punish people longer came this idea that prisons shouldn't be, you know, club fed. You know, they shouldn't be summer camps, you know, that prisons should be worse themselves, that prison is about punishment, and the worse you can make prison, the better. And that'll teach a people a lesson and they won't come back. And of course, you know, time has told us that that's not true. We have roughly a 50% recidivism rate nationwide. So we have a prison system that basically fails half the time. And so this idea of just making prisons really bad places that people wouldn't want to come back to hasn't really panned out. And so what we're starting to see is this real focus on what can we do while people are in prison to get them the programming they need so that they are rehabilitated. States all across the country are also reconsidering these long sentences and asking, you know, do these long sentences, in fact, actually make people worse? It's easier for someone to come home and get a job after they've been away for 5 years rather than for 10 or 20 years. And so I think the time itself can be something that hinders reentry and rehabilitation.
Is there a state or a place in America where there is a brilliant job being done, where we can look at a certain state's efforts and say, okay, there's the incubator, there's the role model for us?
You know, Texas is often held up as a model, and Texas is an interesting state. They don't have a lot of mandatory minimum sentences. They only have a small handful of them for very serious crimes. They were looking at building more prisons and spending billions of dollars on it, or doing criminal justice reform. And so they decided to do criminal justice reform. And Texas has been a place that's working on things like making sure people, get parole when they're supposed to, as opposed to, you know, denying parole over and over and over and keeping people in there longer. Other states that I think have done a great job along the Northeast Corridor, we've got states like Delaware, which repealed many of its mandatory minimums. Louisiana just repealed almost all of its mandatory minimum sentences.
Yeah, well, I don't mean that, because that sounds dangerous to me. I'm more concerned with somebody who's doing a good job of getting people ready to go back out. It seems to me there's a huge opportunity, Molly. Molly Gill is our guest from an organization called FAMM.org, F-A-M-M. And the opportunity is that if you're spending $50,000 a year to incarcerate, like the state of Connecticut is, that if somebody's going to prison for 10 or 15 years or 7 years, if you clipped a year or two off the end of that and use that as a transitionary period, that you'd have incredible financing available for preparing somebody for the outside world as part of the package of incarceration. It just seems to me too common that people are locked up and then sprung without being prepared to walk back out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty common situation. So one thing that Connecticut, one program that they have that is really good is it's called their TRUE program. It is a separate wing of the prison where they actually pair lifers up with very young offenders between the ages of 18 and 25 and create mentoring relationships there. And, surprisingly, a lot of lifers are people who have a lot of wisdom to share with young people about, the things like getting rid of criminal thinking and, you know, learning how to take care of your family. And they do a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy in there, where people are actually figuring out, why did you commit this crime in the first place? What led you to become that angry young person who went out and did these violent things? And they're getting at the root issues that are leading people into this kind of behavior. And, that program so far seems to be very successful and has a good success rate. So that's one example. At the federal level, Donald Trump just signed the First Step Act in December 2018. That was a landmark criminal justice reform bill. It is requiring the federal prison system to create rehabilitative programming, more drug treatment, more therapy, more counseling, more job training. And that's all being implemented right now across the federal prison system. And so we're going to see, in the next couple of years how that all pans out. And what we do know from studies is prisoners do better after prison when they got an education and some job skills while they were in, if they got drug treatment while they were in, and if they did get some of that cognitive behavioral therapy when they were in.
All right, we're talking with Molly Gill. Molly, we'll take a break and then we'll continue the conversation, because this is fascinating and I want to learn more. I want to ask you about, at the beginning of our segment, you talked about what is happening in the United States as if there's a big difference with the rest of the world. So when we continue, I will ask Molly about what's going on elsewhere that we might want to copy. So stay with us on WTIC. WTIC. We are doing another in our continuing series on prison reform. Molly Gill is with us from FAM. So, Molly, you made that allusion to, the suggestion, the implication that maybe elsewhere in the world there's some innovation going on that we might want to emulate. What is going on exciting elsewhere, and what might we want to copy?
Well, a system that a lot of corrections officials are looking to is Norway's system. And Norway's Halden prison has really become sort of a model facility that corrections heads have been visiting. For example, Secretary John Wetzel, who runs Pennsylvania's Department of Correction, went and visited the facility, took a bunch of his top-level staff with him. I think what Halden does that's really remarkable is they have a system that's almost entirely focused on rehabilitation. So they have prison facilities that, frankly, most Americans would look at and say that they're too nice, they're too posh, but they're clean, they're safe, they're humane. Prisoners are fed well, which is actually an issue in a lot of American facilities, is that prisoners are not fed particularly well, and they're in facilities that are, in some cases, literally falling apart and unsafe and unhealthy to live in. And at Halden, you see correctional staff playing board games with prisoners, which is something that would be unthinkable in most American facilities. In most American facilities, there's a real culture that it's the correctional staff versus the prisoners, and they're antagonistic towards each other. And Halden has programs like work release where they let people out and they go work a job and then they come back to the facility. They're very good about bringing family into the facility to visit with prisoners. And so Halden has a lot of things to offer to correctional staff here in the United States. And it is becoming something of a model that corrections heads are looking at.
Is there any demonstration of a system in this country that's able to transition towards something like that? Because to me, it seems like the way our prisons are structured, the union control of employees, the mindset, that there is not an innovative approach, and there isn't even an approach where doing a good job at providing for good outcomes for the societies, even their motivation. Their motivation is we're supposed to get a certain number of people into programs, so they shoot to get the numbers, and they get the numbers, but they aren't necessarily teaching people. They aren't necessarily fixing those holes in the training that would lead to lower recidivism. Do you have any experience or examples of something good?
Yeah, so North Dakota is another state that's looked really closely at the Halden model, and they're implementing a lot of those reforms. And I think one of the things they've really learned is that it requires a cultural change more than anything. You do need to change some of the cultural ideas among your staff, first of all, but also among prisoners. And a lot of the problem with the sort of American culture around incarceration is this idea of warehousing, that, you know, we're not actually here to rehabilitate them. Our job as a correctional, facility is to keep people under lock and key and make sure no one escapes. And if we're doing that, we're doing a good job. And so changing that culture requires, I think, a lot of buy-in from your staff. And I think it requires some other significant changes. A lot of these prisons, frankly, don't have qualified staff. They don't have psychologists, psychiatrists. One in four people in prison, they say, are mentally ill. So you have serious mental illness issues. So it requires getting qualified staffing in. It requires having a different mindset about why people are there and what we're supposed to do with them when we're there. And I think it does require a significant influx of resources and, frankly, some cold hard cash.
Well, are we underfunded in our prisons in terms of total spending per person? Is 50 grand a year to house a prisoner not sufficient to do what they're doing in Norway?
Well, I think the question is, what are we getting for the $50,000 a year? And every state is different, so it's hard to make generalizations about corrections spending. But in most states, you know, they're not getting the kinds of programming that they're getting in Halton, surely. One of the best parts of the First Step Act that just passed is that it allocates $75 million a year specifically for rehabilitative programming. And that's really, I think it is important to sort of put your money where your mouth is and say, you know, we care about lowering recidivism. We're going to make this is an investment in public safety. This is creating a programming that is going to keep us safe, and it's worth spending our money on.
But do you know what they're spending per person per year at Holden?
No, not off the top of my head.
Okay. Because I'm wondering if there is any great disparity. I would think that it doesn't have to cost particularly more. Like you said, it's a different mindset. How do they get to the point? How did they in Norway? Did they have a system more like ours and decide to make a pivot?
You know, my understanding from Norway's system is that it has always culturally been more like this. And even in facilities that aren't Halden in Norway, my understanding is they are much more focused on rehabilitation and much more focused on lowering recidivism so that people don't come back. And Norway does have very low recidivism rates. So I do think going back to that sort of cultural shift that we made from rehabilitation to punishment, basically, that is where the change happened for America. And I think we're starting to see us kind of come back around and realize, you know what, this punishment thing, it might make us feel good and make us feel like we're being tough on crime, but actually it's not tough on crime because we still have 50% recidivism rates, and actually we have now all these other counterproductive things going on with this level of incarceration. We've got communities losing huge groups of young men and young fathers, and we have, you know, the fastest growing rate of female incarceration in the world, and most of those women have children, and so there's impacts on children and family and communities, and we're feeling these impacts all down the line. And so I think we're starting to come around and realize that actually we need to really think very hard about public safety through rehabilitation. As long as we're using, you know, prisons, we need to make sure they're doing a better job of rehabilitating people.
All right, Molly Gill, thank you so much for your time. Great to talk with you.
Great talking to you. Thank you.
Visit fam.org, FAMM.org. Learn more about what they're up to. And we will continue to persevere here to figure out, to develop a model for how prisons should be in this country and in the state of Connecticut.